I'll call us to order. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our December 7th data board meeting. Before we get started, I'd like to welcome two board members, Bernie Carl from Fairbanks and Devin Mitchell from Department of Revenue. Are you here in Anchorage, Devin, or are you in Juneau, or where are you?
I live in Juneau.
In Juneau, okay.
Well, his wife is my daughter's teacher.
Oh, nice.
Small town.
Well, from all of us here at the board, we welcome both of you, and we look forward to good deliberations and good input and good decisions. With that being said, I will ask Craig to call the roll for the board members.
Mr. Wilkin.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Paraday.
Here.
Mr. Mitchell.
Here.
Mr. Carl.
Here.
Ms. Brown.
Here.
Mr. Dick.
Here.
Mr. Cruz.
Here.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Would you continue with staff and the public, please?
Okay. As I point to you, please state your name and organization. We'll start here at the table.
John Springsteen, Ada.
Back corner.
David Brusak, the Interior Gas Utility.
Orange Center, Ada.
Alan Petroleum Gas.
Over here, back corner.
Sidonia Lindley, Agriculture.
Dan Britton with Pentex.
Mark Gardner, PFM.
Gene Terrio, Ada.
Vern Rubright, East West Pacific Consulting.
Roger Purcell, East West Pacific Consulting.
Dave Newford, East West Pacific Consulting.
Back row here.
Jerry Peterson, Ada.
Yuda Ellsworth, Ada.
Tom Erickson, Ada.
Chris Anderson, Ada.
Jerry Judea, Department of Law.
Winston, Ada.
Jim Hensath, Ada.
Brenda Applegate, Ada.
Karsten Rodvik, Ada.
Brent Kampanen, Ada. Do we have public on the phone? Public on the phone.
Yes, this is Bernie. This is Bernie Smith, the public.
Bernie Smith, you said?
Bernie Smith, public.
Okay. Next person.
Robin Wood, Fairbanks Daily News Miner.
You said what, Carl Wood?
Robin Wood.
Oh, Robin Wood. Okay. Next.
Oh, Stewart.
Any other public? Seems like that's it.
Thank you, Brian. Next on our agenda is our agenda approval for today. I will take a motion put on the table for approval.
And move the agenda.
Sorry.
Please identify.
Oh, Russell Day.
Mm-hmm.
Move the agenda.
Very welcome.
Thank you both. Does anybody have any comments, additions, changes? Hearing any objections to today's objection? Agenda? Any objection to it? All right. Agenda is approved. So today we have a pretty full agenda for Ada. We also have the AAA board meeting after this. So under public comments, which is next up, I'm gonna be pretty diligent about 3 minutes for comments for folks that would like to comment. Don't take it personal if I tell you your time's up.
But it's a timer.
But the time is up, and so we got a long day ahead of us. That being said, if you do have a comment, if you'd like to make sure we get your name and your affiliation, if any, on the record, speak clearly to that. And at the end of everybody's comment period, I will check the board members to see if there's any questions. I will start in the room. Is there anybody in the room here wishing to make a public comment? David?
My name is David Prusak. I'm a project manager for the Interior Gas Utility. I work for a company called Stantec. I speak to you today on behalf of our chairman, Mike Meeks, our general manager, Jomo Stewart, We wanted to as you are aware, our board did vote to allow us to enter into the PSA and FA for the advancement of the interior energy project and the purchase of Pentex. We had a robust public process in the last 2.5 weeks in order to get the message out to the community. We've had a great amount of testimony, a great amount of interest, and it was with great excitement that we're here to say thank you. And our chairman has wanted me to make sure that I express to you we're excited to be able to move forward to execute the plan. We just are very, very grateful for it. So thank you.
Thank you, David. Any more questions? Hearing none, appreciate it. Thank you. Anybody else in the boardroom wishing to make public comment?
Public comments. Is that right?
Yes, sir. That's what we're doing right now.
All right. I'm ready.
Come on up.
Governor, good to see you.
Nice to be here. My wife heard I was going to wander around and rattle a few cages, so she insisted I put my hearing aid on. So you all sound a little hollow.
Well, have a seat, Governor.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Bernie, what are you doing so far, Sal?
Well, Governor, they made a mistake and put me on this board, I guess.
I see. Well, that probably is a mistake. Well, my interest is kind of a retrospect. I can recall trying to pick up the pieces of the effort to build the cold storage at the end of the runway here in Anchorage several years ago, because we're going to get in the fish business in a big way. We're going to bring the fish in rural Alaska and process it and put it on the flights going to Asia. And I had the responsibility of picking up the pieces from that, and hindsight was cheap. And I recognize that, but what happened to it is the advent of the 747-400, which could go nonstop. We built this fish plant, ADIP funded it. We sold it finally, and it's, I think, one of the largest churches in Alaska. But anyway, it was a big hit for ADA. And what I'm concerned about here is, I'm a resident of Fairbanks, but I travel a lot, but my interest is in the development of Alaska's resources. We've got oil, gas, timber, fish, minerals, tourism, the little government, and the process of ADA's contribution to the development of those resources is potentially very, very significant. Fairbanks has always wanted gas, and I was intrigued by the recognition that the gas price would come in at probably 15, and now I'm told the gas price is 20 or 21. And the sequence of ADA's involvement in this, I think, deserves a little more examination, even though the people of Fairbanks have spoken, and I respect that. But the idea that ADA, as I understand it, basically acquired the plant from the Pentex, and as a consequence of that acquisition, actually held the plant and now is turning it over to the Fairbanks Natural Gas Group, which are the residents, and then the residents will be responsible for the debt. And evidently there's $50 million and another $6 million, which was more than the first sale. Those things are discussed at length and perhaps considered at length, but the concern I have is what happens if Doyle and his gas? What happens if the price of heating oil stays at its current level? What happens if propane comes in? What happens if the ratepayers don't sign up at the level necessary to amortize the cost? And just what are we doing? Are we granting, or is this an actual contract of sale? I understand it's they don't have to pay anything other than a very low rate of interest, and then it proceeds for an extended period of time and so forth. And I suppose if it doesn't work and there's another source of energy that comes along, whether it be propane or whether it be Doyon's gas discovery, I can't understand why it would not have been more advantageous to wait a few months or maybe a year to see what was going to happen with that well. Because that well comes in, people, obviously, it will come in at a lesser price, and the litigation is going to be in full employment act for some of the lawyers relative to how ADA gets out of it and how the ratepayers are able to take care of it. But you're putting a burden on ratepayers up there at high risk, and that concerns me as a citizen and with the experience I've had relative to investments of this nature. Fairbanks needs natural gas, but it's got to be price competitive. Otherwise, the people in Fairbanks, I think, will choose another alternative. So my 3 minutes are up. I appreciate the consideration. I'm sorry to ramble a little. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. I have absolutely no interest in this. I'm not financially involved, committed to any aspect or special group. But I've kind of watched it, and I've marveled at the recognition that we've got to move ahead, but we've got to move ahead and try and eliminate as much risk as we possibly can in using public money for the benefit of development scenarios. Any questions?
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you for the opportunity to be with you.
Questions from the board? Gary?
Governor, thanks. It's nice to see you again, and
yeah,
nice to see you continue to help shape public policy in Alaska.
Right.
I can just say, in recognition of you being here this morning, all of those questions that you answered today, or you asked us today, we have looked at each one of those to the full extent that we can. And there's an answer for every one of those, for those people that would like to know the answers. And with that, I'll put that on the record. I'm very comfortable with the answers to your questions that others have posed, and that's why I'll be supporting the resolution today. So I just want to let you know that we have looked at those over and over. We have answers. They're good answers, and they give me comfort, and I hope they give the other six board members comfort as well. But thank you.
Well,
so
I
much.
Hope there's a forum for the answers.
There has been, and there will continue to be.
So may I?
Thank you. Park Barry.
So, Governor, I couldn't agree with you more, actually. And I had to work hard. Mr. Wilkin happens to be right. There's been a lot of vetting going on, and I've gone to the public hearings, and I've had the opportunity to speak to this. I think you're 100% right on price of gas. I think you're 100% right on the price of the utility. I think you're 100% right on indebting your grandkids and my grandkids. But at the end of the day, we've been talking about this since 1958. And truly, the best time to plant a tree was 30 years ago, and the second best time is today. I'll be voting in favor of this, even though I don't like everything about it. I really do believe it's in the best interest. That's hard for me to say, because I 100% agree with you. But I think we need to plant the tree today, and I wish I had a tree today. I would have brought one. We need to plant this tree, and then we need to make things better. But we need to plant the tree, and then we need to make sure it gets fertilized, and we should use natural gas because that makes urea. So I think there's a but there's more opportunities now than there's ever been in the history of this state, more than there's ever been. But it's not business as usual. And the only thing that's going to help Alaska is we should have the cheapest energy for all citizens. And we don't. But we should have. I know you tried diligently to do that. And this is the next step. This is not perfect. I think it's not perfect at all. But it is the right step, sir.
Well, thanks, Perrine. You're a developer, and I admire your commitment to what you contribute to Alaska. But one thing that's evident in Alaska is we've got to be competitive price-wise. If we're not competitive, then the dollar goes to the highest return and the least risk. And that's what we're facing with the gas line. And a governor is to be commended. But if it doesn't fit the competitive market for world gas, it won't happen. And that's why we have to be very careful internally that we are competitive. And this appears on the surface not to be competitive unless you focus in on putting in a conditioning facility on the slope. But that's another matter that I don't want to burden you with. But I'm very concerned about the competitiveness, because this group is going to bear the responsibility for the decision that's made, and it has a long-term impact on the citizens of the interior, Alaska, as well as the rail belt. We want gas. We need gas. But it's got to be competitive. It's got to be the right kind of a deal that's in the best interest of Alaska. That's all I'm saying.
Governor, we all hope that Doyon hits the biggest find in the world. In the world. We hope they hit that. Yep. They've done the 3D seismic.
I know that.
And I'm pretty sure they're going to have a success. And when they do, I believe we're not going to get cheap gas, but we'll get more reasonable gas. This contract for gas is only for 3 years. Otherwise, I wouldn't be voting yes on this. If they had a long-term contract, I would tell them they're all crazy.
Well, there's a long-term end to this contract.
Well, there's a long.
I'm going to go ahead.
I've expressed my opinion, and I commend you and look forward to you folks bearing the responsibility for your decision, because you're dealing with public money. And my only concern is, what's the level of risk here in relationship to, you've been waiting 35, 40 years for gas. How long is it going to take Doyon to finish this particular effort? My understanding is 6 to 9 months. But you're not able to wait that long, and I wonder why. Goodbye, folks.
Goodbye.
Thank you for the courtesy.
All right, any other public comments in the conference room? All right, we're going to go online now. Anybody online wishing to make a public comment?
Hi, good morning. This is Merrick Pierce of Fairbanks.
Go ahead, Merrick.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief. I recognize you've got a large agenda today. I just want to put onto the record a few things. That Fairbanks has an air quality problem that's killing people and making people sick, and it's everything from cancer, heart attacks, DVT, strokes, to the damage due to kids where they don't develop to their full potential because of their exposure to the high levels of PM2.5 here. The air pollution in Fairbanks in the winter violates the federal law, some of the worst air pollution found in the United States. The air pollution is essentially high levels of particulate matter coming from wood stoves, of which there are more than 12,000 such said stoves here. We could fix this problem and save lives if we did this energy plan correctly and in accordance with the intent language of House Bill 105, which requires we make affordable energy available. The current energy plan has no chance of fixing the air pollution problem, and that's a huge mistake. House Bill 105 provides enough money. The legislature did their job, but we're not going to get another chance because the state of Alaska is broke. So in addition to losing human lives, we potentially lose federal highway funds, and we damage our relationship with the military because of the air pollution. So after years of acknowledging we have a serious air pollution problem, how strange it is that here in the 21st century, there is not now today a credible plan to fix our air quality. Now, House Bill 105 requires this money be spent in a way that makes energy affordable, but it doesn't. $18 gas plus the $12,000 conversion results in a final cost to the homeowner of somewhere between $23 and $28, which would be the most expensive energy in Fairbanks. The due diligence conducted on propane shows we could bring it to Fairbanks and Fairbanks homeowners for around $15 per million BTU. And that would include FNG customers who are now paying over $21 per million BTUs for gas. So you're moving forward with a plan that won't fix the air quality problem, and it steps over more affordable propane. And it places what I view as doing a violation of the code. So your actions with regard to this energy plan will directly impact people getting sick or dying due to the air pollution problem. The path we are now on guarantees continued physical harm with Fairbanks and Northport residents. I'll wrap up on that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Merrick. Any questions from the board? Gary?
Mr. Pierce, I just want to make sure you're aware, I think, of the RFP 2 years ago where we threw the doors open and asked for the best mousetrap to come in and we would choose it. And in those responses, we didn't have a viable propane proposal. So we really, other than having occasional testimony, don't have a propane proposal. So if someone really does want to propose the pluses and the minuses of propane, certainly someone can do that, but we haven't had the opportunity to vet that. I just want to make sure you're aware of that.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkin, for that question. There was a team, very, very competent experts, Brian Murkowski, Marianne Pease, and experts within the propane industry, that did approach the Interior Gas Utility under a non-disclosure agreement, and we laid out step-by-step how we could do propane.
Okay, well, I appreciate that, and I haven't had the benefit of seeing that, so perhaps sometime I could. Thank you, Mr. Pierce.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Anything further online? Anybody else online wishing to make public comments?
Just a question. Robin Wood with the News Miner here. Curious who the individual everyone was referring to as governor is. I missed his name.
Murkowski.
Right, thank you.
Anybody else online wishing to make a comment?
Yes.
Go ahead. Hello? Is there anybody else?
For me? Hello, I'm here.
All right. Please state your name and affiliation.
Yes.
Okay, whoever's dialing in, we can't hear you. I don't know if you have digital static or you're on speakerphone, but we can't hear you in the room.
Anybody, is anybody else online wishing to make a public comment? Anybody else online? All right, have you solved your problem as far as the gentleman that was trying to make a statement? Are you there? All right, we will, not hearing anything, we will close public comments at this time. Item number six is prior minutes for October 26th.
Move for approval.
Second.
Does anybody have any corrections?
Mr. Chair, if I could direct the board to page 7 of 9.
All right.
And if we'd go down to the third paragraph, the paragraph that starts with Jerry Judet. Come down to line 6 with the sentence that starts with Mr. Wilton. Go in on that sentence. I'd like to, this would be a motion to strike 7 and insert 4, so it would read comprised of 4 elected members.
All right.
And then go to sentence 7, which starts with appointed members. I'd like to go into that sentence and move that it read possibility is bothersome that, comma, new language, if the borough government was to become involved, comma, rates could be set at, or could be set by.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any objections?
Could you restate that correction?
So the insertion, the sentence would read, it stated the possibility is bothersome that, now new language, that if the borough government was to become involved, comma, existing language, rates could be set by 10 elected officials. Thank you.
Any objections to those corrections? Any objections to adopting the minutes? Are approved. Brings us up to item number 7 under new business. We will then read it in. Resolution G17-18 relating to the employment of Janet Reiser as the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. John?
So item 7A, Resolution G17-18 regards the employment of Janet Reiser, Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority, effective as of January 2nd, 2018. Ms. Reiser is a chemical engineer by training, had previously worked with Dow Chemical and Clorox, has a last experience working with Anna Pacific, and considerable rail belt experience, currently serving as chair of the Chugach Electric Board, completing her third term, and that will complete prior to beginning with ADA. In my mind, a very welcome addition to the Alaska Energy Authority.
Thank you, John. We have questions for this resolution.
I'll move the resolution, Mr. Chair.
Second.
Discussion?
Second. Fred Perry.
Thank you. Discussion before I call for the vote? Seeing none. Friend?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Commissioner Perry.
Aye.
Mr. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mr. Carl.
Aye.
Ms. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Pruitt?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Corinne. Item number B is resolution G17-19, approving funding for the NavVision upgrade and sewer server upgrade project.
John? Can you get on the table?
Go ahead.
Move to approve G17-19 for discussion.
Second.
John?
Yep. Item 7B, resolution number G17-19, regards funding for an upgrade and the purchase of a new server for ADA's Enterprise Financial Software System. The amount of the request is $100,000. The upgrades and new server are needed to continue to meet the requirements of the authority's business processes and reporting, including financial statements, budgets, loans, loan dashboards, project management, investment management, and human resources and payroll systems. Further, the upgrade is needed in anticipation of the retirement of mainstream support for ADA's existing NAV 2013 Enterprise Financial Software System. I'll ask Brent Applegate to be able to answer any questions if there are.
For the new board members, Brenda's the CFO for you. Welcome, Brenda.
Thank you. Are there any questions? I brought our IT staff here to see if they are the experts in this. Be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair, it's probably kind of rhetorical, but I might be remiss since my commissioner, who I'm representing today, came from the Department of Administration where they're doing consolidation of IT within state government. So is there interaction with the state of Alaska as a public corporation of the state, or is it just totally independent as far as the IT work that goes on, whether it's here or other public corporations?
I'll let our IT manager correct me if I say something wrong, but I believe we are completely separate as far as our IT system. We're not on the state's email system. We have our own accounting system, but we do follow the state IT standards, and so we are in compliance with the state's requirements on IT. Parents, is that correct?
One other thing I might want to add is that all of our software licenses go through the state, so we buy into the state business model for software licenses. So per user is all split between the Department of Commerce, so we get a lower price on all of our software, such as server.
Thank you.
Further questions? Brenda, I do have one, and it has to do with how often do you anticipate this happening? I mean, is it going to be every other year, every year? Is there something, you know, it's always, in my business, businesses, it seems that...
Probably our last upgrade was in April of 2014, and yep. I think that's about right every 2 to 3 years, Jim? 3 years?
3 to 4.
Has the upgrade price been consistent, or has it grown quite a bit?
This is actually lower than our last upgrade price because we don't have to put in the amount of hardware that we did the last time. So I think it's dependent on what the upgrade requirements are.
Does it make sense to budget annually in reserve the software and whatnot upgrades, and then once it comes up, we have to do it? That it's instead of a one-time hit to the financials that we've reserved for it?
Well, we would, I don't know that we would always know too far in advance how much we're going to need for an upgrade. And as far as the hit to our financial statements, even a reserve, we would still end up showing the cost on our books and the period we incur it. So,
but if you reserve a third of some number?
We could. We could.
Mr. Chair, kind of a additional thought in that same line would be, why not finance it? Meaning that if you can leave money invested, you can finance on a relatively short-term basis, on a tax-exempt basis, maybe that would be an alternative that would be worth considering.
For $100,000, I mean, like I said, the last upgrade, I think, was $200,000 was our budget. So they've been relatively smaller amounts of money,
Are you depreciating the existing system about this much every year to compensate? Maybe that's the way to do it. Just put a higher depreciation number on it that covers it as an operating cost.
Yeah.
So when you do the upgrade, you capitalize it and depreciate it again over 3 years or whatever you think it's going to be.
And we could do that, yeah.
And we do lease purchase equipment at the state level, departmental level, regularly for as purchases at or below $100,000. So it's not particularly difficult. I mean, it's not the same level of financing as what we'll be talking about later.
And like I said, traditionally what we've done, because the dollar amounts have been relatively small relative to ADA as a whole, is just done the upgrades. We haven't been capitalizing and depreciating these upgrades because they're more of maintenance type things for our system. And we've just been expensing them in the year that we've incurred the cost. But
if you got a new server, that's hardware. So, I mean, I'm just saying that at the end of the day, it more reflects your annual real cost on an annual basis to the financials, so we get a better picture instead of having these spikes some way.
We could definitely capitalize and appreciate those assets. Okay. Yeah.
Further questions from the board? All right, I will entertain the question. Corinne, would you please pull the board?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Perry.
Aye.
Mr. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mr. Carl.
Aye.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Pruse.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Item number C in our agenda is the Interior Energy Project update. John?
And for item 7C, IEP update, I'll ask Gene Terrio and his team to join the table to present.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the benefit of the new members, a little bit of background. On October 26th of this year, the ADA Board did approve, through the adoption of Resolution G-1716, moving forward with adopting and approving, giving Director Springsteen the authority to sign the purchase and sale agreement for the consolidation of the gas utilities in Fairbanks and the financing plan. That was done with a termination date on that authority of November 30th. Due to remaining differences of opinions on the documents, the IGU board did not take action by November 30th, and so the power authority that was given to Mr. Springsteen did lapse. In the meantime, though, IGU did reach out, resulted in direct negotiations between our chairman and the chairman of IGU. That resulted in modifications to the PSA, the Purchase and Sale Agreement, and Financial Agreement. There was a meeting of the minds on the wording of the documents that then resulted in ultimately a version of the document that was made public on November 29th, I believe. At that time, that day, in fact, Member Wilkin and I were with IGU personnel and met with the Daily Newsminer Board of Directors, or Editorial Board, excuse me, and let them know that we had reached agreement on modified documents. They were being made available to the public. IGU had, as Mr. Pruzek indicated, a public process in Fairbanks to take public comment, and ultimately resulted in their board of directors meeting on Tuesday and approving and authorizing Executive Director Stewart to sign the purchase sale agreement and the financing agreement. And that the vote did pass on a vote of 5-2. So that brings our board to now consideration of the same amended documents today. You have on your agenda a new resolution that would refresh the authority for the executive director to move forward with the signing of the PSA and the FA. That will kick off a series of over the next couple of months as we move towards closure of that deal with a target of actually closing in around May on the deal, which will ultimately then allow for the consolidation of the two existing gas utilities in Fairbanks to take place with the transfer of the Pentex assets to local control. When ADA first proposed in 2015 to purchase the Pentex asset, They advised the local community that the plan was to hold them for a relatively short period of time and move towards consolidation under local control. And so if the board takes action today on the resolution before you, we will take a step forward in moving forward on that plan as it was proposed to the community, to the legislature, and to the governor in 2015. With that, I'm available to answer questions. I have Mr. Britton with FNG and the Pentex assets, and Mr. Gardner, part of the IEP team, to answer, chime in if there are technical questions that require their input.
And refresh my memory, in the process of the acquisition of Pentex, Ada went, and there were three resolutions by the Fairbanks North Star Borough, the City of Fairbanks, and the City of North Pole, supporting the purchase and ultimately consolidation. Is that a correct statement?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And at the time, was there any dissenting votes?
I'm sorry, I don't remember off the top of my head whether there were any dissenting votes on any of the assemblies or city councils. I do have copies of those resolutions. The Ada board did not take action to close that deal of the Pentex purchase until it did go up to the communities. It's a statutory obligation to present to the communities the information that was presented in the public forum in May of that summer. Very succinctly laid out the plan of what the purchase price was, how the purchase price was evaluated to be a fair price, the expectation that the purchase done out of the Ada's revolving loan fund would pay the expected rate of return to the Ada revolving loan fund. Of course, that's where the Ada dividend goes to the state treasury, and so there is that expectation of return. That was very clearly laid out to the community leaders at the public forum. And in fact, that information was picked up in at least one of the resolutions that was considered and passed at the local level that specifically talked about the Pentex purchase price. And so that was specifically acknowledged in two of the resolutions that were passed. And it wasn't until after receipt of that public input from those local governmental bodies that the Ada board then actually closed on that deal and purchased the assets.
Thank you.
Jerry? Mr. Chairman, to answer your question, there were none. It was unanimous on all bodies.
So questions for Gene or his group on IEB? Many board members, it's a subject in the executive session, and then we have some resolutions to talk about it again before, but it's in particular in the last sequence of events in the last 30 days that Gene and Fairbanks are the guys that have come to, the board members. Gary?
Gene, Mr. Chairman, I think it would be helpful because I've been surprised over the last month when I've talked to folks. There's conventional wisdom is that gas is higher priced than fuel oil. So each week FNG does a market survey. I wonder, Gene, if you just for the record and for folks that may just have that sense that don't live in Fairbanks, would you just run down that analysis that you did with oil versus gas in today's climate?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have here actually a printout of the FNG survey of local fuel prices, and these are prices delivered going back to 2004. As of Monday, the local average price for delivered fuel oil is $2.78 delivered to a residential customer. That equivalent to $21.03 natural gas. Currently, FNG's residential customer, Mr. Wilkin, you're one of them, gets gas delivered to them at $20.81. So right now, the delivered price of natural gas to the outside of your structure, your residence, is lower than if you got fuel oil delivered to your residence right now.
Thank you. And I have been surprised at the number of people that said, to the person that said, oh, I didn't know that. But let me ask you to also talk about one other thing. And then you take that price, which in today's climate is essentially parity, then you take the efficiency of a gas boiler versus an oil boiler, and that efficiency is, I'll just let you finish up that sentence.
So if you buy a brand new appliance that is used natural gas, you can expect, in comparison to a fuel oil fired appliance, to get anywhere from 5 to 10% greater efficiency. So basically, that appliance is able to capture more of the generated BTUs and put them to good use on the inside of the walls of your dwelling. And if you think about it, if you know anything about the appliances. A natural gas-fired furnace or boiler, the exhaust stack can be a plastic pipe. That's because so many more of the BTUs of heat are captured and used in the building and don't go up the stack as heat. If you heat with fuel oil, the stack temperature is so much higher that you can't use plastic pipe. It has to be a metal pipe.
So it's safe to say then, at parity, you then take efficiencies, it could be as much as 10%, so that $20 gas really is $18 gas. I think that's important to note because the price piece has been dragged all over the place, but those are cold, hard facts.
Part of the equation.
Yes.
I'd probably also assume not to benefit the gas versus the oil, but from my experience of maintenance on a oil-fired furnace versus a gas-fired furnace is night and day, a lot less expensive just on the maintenance side, not counting the efficiency.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and I did mention that at the IGU meeting on Tuesday, that and they had a number of businesses, both that came and testified on Tuesday and the previous week in a public comment, that basically said for businesses, it's kind of a no-brainer. The maintenance on their heating apparatus is so much lower. They factor that into the operations. And earlier this year, I was actually at my desk, which is at F&G office, and the IGU board had just announced a rate increase, a small rate increase, to cover the additional cost of the gas supply as it was on that date. And yet I was surprised that a large business operation had come in and indicated that they wanted to switch over to natural gas at today's price as soon as possible. And it was the operator for the Bentley Mall doing some work on one of their satellite buildings. So I asked him to come into the office and just chat with me a little bit and was basically posed the question that even at that gas price, he was very anxious to get on the system as an interruptible customer initially if it had to be, but how quickly could he get on as a firm customer? And when I asked him about the price, he said that his operator basically told him that long term, it was a no-brainer decision that you wanted to be on natural gas, even at that price, because the operations, the maintenance was so much lower, the efficiency was higher. In addition, their out-of-state owners are very interested in getting rid of buried fuel tanks, which is a growing concern for business operations, not necessarily as much for residential, but that all factors in. In addition, if you have a fuel oil fired burner and you re-gun it, convert it over to natural gas, you might not get as great of an increase of efficiency as if you replaced it with a manufactured gas fired appliance. But you will see an increase in efficiency because the day after I have the boiler maintenance guy come and service my boiler, which always, it includes replacing the nozzle because they get fouled over time, brushing off the heat exchanger. As soon as they close that up and I fire off my boiler, the deposits of carbon start on that heat exchange again because of the type of fuel I'm using. And I will systematically lose efficiency in that apparatus until the next servicing. With natural gas, you will not experience that loss of efficiency.
All right, thank you for your indulgence. I just think that's an important point that everyone needs to appreciate.
I wanted to follow up, Gene, with some of the questions that have been posed as we come to
decision-making time, for which I'm appreciative of all of the work, both within our staff and within ITU, to bring us to today. But one of the assertions I heard during testimony this morning concerned waiting for DOI-OM, which I believe we've accommodated that in how we've structured that, and I just wanted to ask you to speak to it.
Thank you. As the comment was being made, I remembered about 2 years ago briefing the governor the last time that DOI-OM was going out to drill a well, and briefing him that we were structuring this deal hopefully to not preclude DOI-OM's ability sometime in the future should they find gas. If in fact it's competitively priced to fuel the system in Fairbanks North Pole as we build it out. That was 2 years ago. That was a well drilling ago. We have always taken the position that we wish the best for DOI-OM. We hope they find gas, a resource that much closer to the consumer can't help but be a good thing. You know, when I get up in a tall building here, you know, you can look out and see the oil platforms in Cook Inlet. That's a great thing. It's been a great thing for Cook Inlet. But yet, asking the community to wait again in the hopes that a resource is found in a quantity that is commercial, that doesn't require expensive treatment, and will require a means of transmission into the system. We hope they find that. We hope it's a quantity that's economic. We hope it doesn't require a lot of treatment. If they find it, it will take time to develop it. As was mentioned, at IGU's request, we secured a shorter-term supply of gas out of Cook Inlet that could dovetail nicely with a supply from DOI-OM if it's found. And brought into production in the future. So we again have tried to structure the IEP enterprise as to not preclude use of the resource should they find it.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. The other question I wanted to ask you to address was just the discussions around conversion.
Yes, conversion is the next great piece of this operation. We had to get to the right economies of scale by combining to the two utilities, get the price delivered as low as possible, and then the next step is what can you do to help with conversions. As I've mentioned, the businesses in the core of Fairbanks are already interested in converting, even at today's price, because they operate under a different sort of matrix in making a decision on at what price is attractive to them. That's a good thing for the United Utilities because the FNG system has been primarily built out, meaning that there's pipe in the street now to hook up a whole lot more customers. That includes the light industrial and business operations in the core of Fairbanks. There's an expression of the interest already at today's price. Should they sign up sooner rather than later, once we have the quantity to serve their needs, that helps the overall economics of the enterprise. It drives down the per unit price. That then makes the commodity that much more attractive to residential consumers. The last time that ADA did a refresh on what was likely to appeal to the consumers, that was the Cardinal-Entrix study, we did a comparison of what level of residential consumers were likely to present themselves if the price of fuel oil was $2.75. We're at that price today. The suggestion was that over time, the pipe in the street, as it's charged with gas, you could expect to get up to 50% of the residential consumers to hook up over a certain number of years. We were not banking on 100% of the consumers hooking up. We crunched the numbers just on 50%. IGU took a little bit more conservative approach and is only accounting on 35%. So again, as the pipe goes into a subdivision, only counting on 35% of the eligible customers actually hooking up. How does that flow through to the economics of the enterprise? Our take was that we could expect over time 50% of the customers hooking up. It's a volume enterprise. the more customers you can get to hook up, you're able to spread your fixed costs. That drives down the per unit cost, makes it more appealing to get the next customer. And again, knowing that that assistance with conversion is very key, that's the next best issue. We believe, though, that this enterprise will, over the first 2 or 3 years, drive that per unit cost down to the $15 range. IGU, being more conservative in their estimation, they think it goes down into the $17 range. Then that begs the question, what resources can you bring to bear to help a residential consumer that might have to completely swap out his heat plant, which comes with a price of $10,000 to $13,000. Having just done it myself, my conversion was $12,000. What resources might be brought that can help a residential customer do that? The Fairbanks First of our borough right now has been receiving EPA AirShare non-attainment grants. They've been able to tap into a supply of money. That Senator Murkowski was able to tweak the language on those grant funds to make sure that the Fairbanks First of borough, because it has seasonal air quality problems, was eligible for those grant dollars. They've been successful in tapping into those grant dollars. They have used those grant dollars to date to help swap out old, inefficient wood-burning apparatus. But there's a set number of those in the community, and as they reach the last of those apparatus that need to be swapped out, they will continue to be able to access those EPA grant monies if, in fact, the Federal Treasury continues to make those funds available. And they will be able to steer those monies to help with residential conversions in the future years. In addition, in the past, the IGU and ADA personnel, myself, F&G personnel, have worked on, as part of a working group at the local level, looking at what the local community can do with driving down the cost of new heating apparatus. If they were bought in bulk, they can bring a significant benefit to the consumer. What can they do with local lenders on bill payment repayment methodologies to help residents convert over if in fact they are faced with a $10,000 to $13,000 conversion cost? There are a lot of mechanisms that can be brought to bear. There are other federal funds that can flow through at low interest rates that can help with that. So we believe that that next great question, next great effort, conversions, there are things that can be done. There are sources of money that can be brought to bear. But that really is it's an operation that really needs to take place at the local level. The local government, the local utilities are ready to take up that challenge.
I think to add to Fred's question, the three studies that you spoke of, two Cardinal and I forget the other one, you spoke of residential at 35 and 50. In those three studies, what was the percent of commercial customers that said they were convert given current market prices in those three studies?
I don't remember if Cardinal did one for business, but I believe IGU in their last study incorporated businesses, and their expectation, I believe, is that 70% of the building or the businesses.
David, is that correct?
That's
70% commercial?
Yes.
David, present.
And then again, Mr. Chairman, that's important because each one of those businesses, because of the higher volume that they use, help to drive down that per unit cost, which then makes it more attractive to the low volume users, the residential users. And really, the enterprise is agnostic on whether they're selling a unit of gas to a business or a resident. The benefit to drive down the overall unit cost, there's just as much benefit if it's a sale to a business as it is to a residential customer.
Brian? So, Gene, could you enlighten us why Golden Valley wasn't at the last meeting, and or why the hospital wasn't there? Those two customers alone would really help the total economics for Fairbanks, and I would think they should have been at the table.
I'm not sure as well why the hospital is not. You certainly would hope that some of the air quality problems and health problems that are caused by the current air quality problems would be of interest to the hospital. As I've pointed out, right now our cost compared to fuel oil, although I'm not sure if the hospital has a bulk, you know, purchase that maybe drops theirs down a little bit below what a residential customer can achieve. But I think probably the fuel costs right now are pretty close to parity. And I would suggest either that Mr. Britton or IGU, you know, approach the hospital again about, you know, whether it isn't time for them to switch back over. They are, though, an enterprise in Fairbanks that has a dual fuel capability. They're able to, you know, switch their existing apparatus pretty seamlessly back and forth between fuel oil and natural gas. And a while back, they chose to go with fuel oil because at that time it was below the delivered cost of natural gas.
And what about Golden Valley?
Golden Valley, I think the last interaction that we had with them was basically that they were interested in what our ultimate delivered price to the community would be, not necessarily delivered to a residential customer, but what would it delivered price be to their property, bulk LNG. I think we're now zeroing in on you know, what that price will be, and so if, you know, the local utilities will need to pick up the phone and call them and say, now that we are able to give you a better price, a more firm price on what to expect the delivered price to be, would they consider them using that in their LM6000 out North Pole? I'm not sure. I believe that IGU has had more recent conversations with Golden Valley than Ada has, so I'm not sure whether Mr. Pruzak's got anything additional to add to that.
Just seems sad that they weren't there.
I think ultimately having worked at...
I just wanted to add that the current models don't include usage by Golden Valley and others, and I think there's a substantial opportunity to improve the targeted pricing that we're showing today with the addition of a customer like Golden Valley, additional customers like the hospital. We do expect them to come back on soon. Golden Valley is looking at other options for power generation, distributed power generation, smaller units that they can follow wind with a little better. I think we're setting ourselves up to have an opportunity to take advantage of some of those potentials if they move forward. So I think there's a good opportunity to get Golden Valley to convert and begin to using some gas. It would improve the forecasted pricing that we have now. So I just want to make it clear that we haven't included those volumes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, as I was just about to say, having worked at Golden Valley for a period of time, I know their board is mindful of the decisions that they make in the local community. What does it do not only to their cost of produced power, but every electric customer that they serve also has a heating bill. And they know that when the price of heating fuel went so high, you know, they were losing customers because people were leaving the community because of the cost of heating. That meant that that was a loss of a customer buying their electricity too. So they are mindful, as they sit at their board table, about as they make decisions on the fuels that they use to generate power, what impact does that have on the cost of fuels that their customers need to heat their homes. And as Mr. Britton indicated, the numbers that we presented to the board as we crunched what we expected the volumes used to be did not count on Golden Valley taking a volume. So if, in fact, they did come on, again, it's all based on volume. The higher utilization you have, the lower the previous price goes.
Yeah. If I could just add one thing, one of the things we don't talk about, we forget to talk about, is the benefits to new construction and business development that the gas offers. One of the things we've heard from developers over the years is, as soon as they get used to using gas in the community, they'll never build another building on oil if they have the option. It saves them substantial dollars in their construction. A large box store type construction, they go to rooftop
air handlers. They don't have boilers in their facilities. They save the money on square footage by having that type of heat source. It's their standard design that they use everywhere else in the U.S. and the nation, and that's their preference. They don't have to purchase and install large oil tanks at a potential environmental risk in the future. They have opportunities to use much higher efficiency appliances, use it for gas dryers, for cooktops, things of that nature when you're building a new house. The gas at the price it is today is well over half the cost of electricity. So when you look at using gas on a dryer versus electricity, you have an opportunity to save 50% of your electricity costs in using it in these appliances and using your cooktop and things of that nature. So we forget about sometimes the opportunities that will come with new construction when new homes are built. They will go to gas as their first choice.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the update. That brings us to item number D, executive session, and the topics we're going to discuss is IEP, the Interpretive Project, Mach 1, personnel matters and financial matters, and I will entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move that the board enter an executive session to discuss confidential and financial information related to the Interior Energy Project, Mustang Operations Center, personnel matters, and financial matters.
Second.
Any objections? Glenn, where are we going there?
You are going to be in Aston Room.
Which one? Aston Room?
Aston.
All right. We had you a different boardroom, folks.
The phone will be put on mute while the board is in executive session.
No idea.
You're back on the record.
Thank you. All right, so we're back in session, and the quorum was established. And advise the board is not taking formal action on matters discussed while in executive session. That brings us up under new business item number 7, Resolution G17-16A, and that's approving the sale of Pentex Alaska to the Interior Gas Utility. It's also approving a finance agreement with IGU, authorizes the transfer of the North Coast PAD, North Coast Material Sales Contract to the IGU, authorizing extension of maturity date of IGU existing line of credit, membership purchase, sale agreement, and a financing agreement.
Mr. Chairman, move G17-16A for approval.
Second.
Discussion, John.
And resolution number G17-16A regards sale of Pentex to IGU and the financing agreement with IGU. I believe the resolution and the agreements meet multiple important objectives for ADA as it works with the Interior Gas Utility and furthering the Interior Energy Project, including meeting the fiduciary responsibilities of ADA, promoting the ongoing operation of an investment-grade utility, and maintaining the ability to bond, which will be critical for responsible expansion.
Thank you. Discussion from the board. Any discussion?
Well, I'll just, I've never played football, but I kind of understand it. And it occurred to me this morning, I feel like the ADA team is on the line and quarterback, and we're about on the 5-yard line to push it across to score a touchdown, that being a successful utility. And it occurred to me that ADA, as the quarterback, is turning around and looking in the backfield, and the backfield is now IGU. So we today, I hope, are going to take that ball and pass it to IGU, and they're going to score a touchdown and make this an investment-grade utility that benefits Interior Alaska for generations. So with that, I'm ready to pass the ball and help wherever I can. And I just have to say that this is a great day for Fairbanks. This is a great day for the family on Badger Road. And I'm ready to support the resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Mr. Chairman.
Fred.
Mr. Chairman, I had a few things I wanted to put forward as we ready ourselves for this vote. Of course, there's a range of opinions. We continue to hear them this morning in public comment. We've been interacting with the public at large and the various stakeholders in this process for close to a year. I think we've spent over $350,000 in due diligence. But given that range of opinions, I would really refer people back into the process, because I think the process that's brought us to this day has been robust, has considered a wide range of options and opinion. From a practical point of view, the agreement's pretty straightforward. It gives Fairbanks a single utility, a single merged gas utility under local control. It returns the purchase price of Pentex to Ada, its revolving loan fund, with a standard rate of return. That's always been contemplated from the very beginning of this effort in late 14, early 2015. The purchase of Pentex by Ada prevented the possibility of a monopoly, and it enabled this formation of a single gas distribution utility in the North Fairbanks North Star Borough. And if you didn't get that done, you're never going to get gas distributed into medium density areas. You know, you're only going to have the downtown as you've had previously. I've heard a lot of questions about the valuation of these assets, and I would just note that we used the Brattle Group and Western Financial Group to determine the proposed acquisition price for Pentex. It was within the expected range for comparable companies and transactions. It's a straightforward financial evaluation based on market valuations and comparables. All of that information was disclosed at the time, and you had resolutions by the three city entities, the three local government entities, that acknowledged that Ada would be reimbursed for that full price, and that's what's being accomplished today. From a strategic point of view, Bernie alluded to this morning, you've been trying to bring natural gas to Fairbanks since the 50s.
Yeah.
And the best opportunity to do that, this sale is a significant step forward in using the tools the legislature laid out to bring that vision to reality. I also want to note Pentex operates in the black. At the time of this transfer, I was looking at the books today, and this is a preliminary number as we work to finish our audit, but Pentex has got $5-plus million in cash on hand that transfers with this sale. So Pentex operates in the black. It generates cash flow. The gas supply contract is medium term, which allows Doyon or other gas providers to enter that process in the future. And the financial model that underpins this transaction has been stress tested as to conversion. It's been stressed by us. We assumed a 50% rate, and IGU further stress tested it with a 35% rate, and it's still cash flowed. I can't get past the key element, which is to address air quality. Air quality issues in Fairbanks are real. If you follow the news every winter, there's air quality there that's worse than Beijing. And the need to get that moving is before us in this transaction. As to some of the concerns with seasonal air quality issues, these remain to be addressed using federal tools and the need to address the EPA's non-attainment area. So I just want to speak in favor of a sale in the sense that would have been better if it gotten done previous, but the best time to move forward is today.
Thank you, Brett. Bernie?
Mr. Chairman, I will be voting in favor of this. I see things that I would like to, I wish were changed, but, you know, you can wish in one hand and shit in the other and see which one fills up the fastest. I'm telling you, this is the best deal we have going, so we have to go for it. And then we got to make it better. And we have those opportunities to make it better. We won't have an opportunity to make it better if we don't start somewhere. So today we have to start. I mean, with the line put in place, having FNG and being able to look at other gas when it does come available, as I testified today, I hope that Doyon is the most successful gas company in the world. But without having these assets in place, we would be held hostage. So we have to do this, and I hope that I know I'll be voting yes.
You, Bernie? Gary?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just one other thing. I just received an email from Jomo Stewart, and Jomo is saying, He couldn't get on to testimony this morning, but he said, so if you'd please accept a repeat of thanks below, and thanks to Mrs. Black, Ms. Black and Director Springsteen and the members of the IEP subcommittee, and allow special amplified thanks for Mark and Jean. It will be greatly appreciated. Compliments, Joel Stewart. So, read that record, please.
Thank you. Further comments?
I would like to acknowledge the fact that an underlying thing that doesn't get talked about quite much at all, and that's the fact that the 3-year gas contract that will be coming into effect, I guess, this spring, has a couple significant things different from years past. The first is that it doesn't have an escalation clause, so the price of gas will be fixed, which is very good. And second, it allows for a volume increase without having to pay for it. And I think that's very important as you go through the conversions, because there is a difference of opinion between a 50% conversion rate and 35%. But at the end of the day, we don't have to pay for whatever the volume is for that opportunity. I call it opportunity cost. And I think that's an anchor to this contract, and I anchor it to the success for the next 3 years. I would also like to say that, you know, IGU purchasing, the hurdle I see is the focus on conversions, and that's critical. All hands on deck. It's important that the community gets behind it, and the community does things to facilitate it. Whether it's economically or from an acknowledged standpoint that people are educated to the fact what it really means, what will help, how it will cause a better community and a better living environment in Fairbanks. That being said, I plan on supporting this resolution also.
Call for the question.
Call for the question. Corinne?
Mr. Wilkin.
Aye.
Commissioner Paradise.
Aye.
Mr. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mr. Carl.
Yes, yes, yes.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Pruitt.
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we also have resolution G-21 associated with this resolution approving amendment to the loan agreement with IGU to cover due diligence costs. Is that on the table for?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll move resolution G-17-21.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you, Elaine. Second. John, discussion?
Yeah, resolution number G-17-21 regards an amendment to the loan agreement with IGU to cover up to $350,000 of IGU's due diligence expenses from such loan proceeds.
Thank you. Discussion?
Point of information. Is it 17-20 or... 21.
21.
Yeah.
17-21. Yes.
Okay.
And it's all part of tab 7, item 7E. Yeah. Item 7E includes three resolutions, and they're separated by the
left it in your book.
You're only
just say
20.
That's
7F. Okay. Thank you.
Question.
Question, Craig.
Mr. Wilkin.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Paradise.
Aye.
Mr. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mr. Carl.
Aye.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Pruitt.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Now, further to under new business resolution G-17-22 relating to the costs incurred and opposed transaction costs of IGU. Move for approval.
Wilkin. Second.
Yes.
And resolution number G-17-22 regards covering up to $350,000 of the cost incurred in the proposed transactions with IGU from the FY 2014 capital budget appropriation to cover ADA costs.
Okay. Any discussion on that?
Question.
Question. Brent?
Mr. Wilkin.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Paradise.
Aye.
Mr. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mr. Carl.
Aye.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Next item of the new business, item F, memo, LNG storage tank, resolution G-17-20 hearing.
authorizing additional loans to Fairbanks Natural Gas LLC and storage facility. Move for approval.
Second.
Just keep
Item 7F, resolution number G17-20 regards authorizing an additional CETS loan of $45.5 million to Fairbanks Natural Gas for the design, construction, and commissioning of an LNG storage facility consisting of a 5.25 million gallon tank and auxiliary equipment to be located adjacent to an existing FNG storage facility. Proceeding with construction of the facility will require IGU's concurrence. Further, the resolution extends the maturity date of the existing line of credit with FNG until the closing of the financing agreement or until that closing is canceled. And yeah, Mr. Britton's available if you have any questions.
Okay. Dan, you want to give us a quick update?
Thank you. Dan Britton with President Pentex. This board is... heard about the storage project a number of times, once back in 2013 when Fairbanks Natural Gas was developing the project, and again a few months ago when we requested funding to move forward with the updated FEED work on the storage project. The storage project plays a crucial role into the overall interior energy plan, and in my view a crucial piece of infrastructure for our community, not only as it relates to the interior energy plan, but as it relates to the gas availability from any source. Regardless of the source, security of supply is important. Ability to manage peak demands versus the seasonal demands is important and a key financial component. This storage tank allows for us to kick off the interior energy plan. Gives us a definitive date of additional supply availability. Lets us know that once constructed, we can begin adding customers again to our system. It allows us to use the existing LNG production capacity in a greater way. We can fill the tank in the summer and use that excess storage capacity in the winter, drawing it down, which allows us to sell an additional 400,000 cubic feet a year with our existing liquefaction capacity.
Which is roughly 40% increase?
It's about 50% increase. We're about 800,000 MCF a year now. It allows us to look at the LNG production capacity as the demand comes on in the first year or two of the interior energy project, and gives us an opportunity to look at any potential other sources, the Doyon gas, whether or not that makes sense, whether or not there's a significant fine. Any further advancements in the pipeline. So the storage project and the size of this storage project also provides a significant added security of supply for our community. Building a tank of this size takes our 5 days of peak storage, which we have today in the winter, at the start of this project up to 30, 40 days plus. So that gives a comfort level to people converting from an alternative heating source to gas, knowing that we have LNG in a tank in Fairbanks ready for use during the extreme colds of the winter. It provides for that level of redundancy as we'll continue to look for efficient ways to provide to our customers as we continue to build out the system. We're always going to be looking for what's the best way with the dollars we have to provide the best service we can to our customers. And this storage project is a key component of that. We have completed recently an updated request for proposals. We have, for the tank construction, we're pleased with where we're at right now with the likely contractor that would do the completion of the foundation and the construction of the tank. I'd rather not right now. We've got some final negotiations that are going on. But I can tell you I'm quite pleased with the direction it's taking as it relates to some benefits of the tank itself. Other than that, I think that's the key highlights of where we're at with the storage project. Once approval is provided, we will begin construction almost immediately. We will begin to do the civil works almost within weeks, literally. We advanced additional geotechnical last week to finalize a couple of items. The construction activities will take advantage of the winter freeze because of the ground conditions. And so it'll start quickly and it'll ramp up quickly, and target completion is by July of 2019, and then the tank would begin to be filled. So we want the project definitively completed by January 1st of 2020 so that it's in service and available for the storage tax credits that currently do apply to LNG storage.
Bernie?
Will it be refrigerated piling, or will it be a refrigerated pad? And will you use the LNG as the refrigeration?
We are moving towards a pad. Originally, our plan was for piling, but after some additional engineering work and some alternative proposals, it's looking like the pad is the best option. And we will be keeping the ground frozen. We're not going to use the LNG as the refrigerant for that purpose. It's more cost-effective to use the passive thermal pots.
Really? Even though you have to take LNG and you're going to have to vaporize it, you could already go through the foundation, lose the heat you need to lose, keep the foundation frozen at very little parasitic load. Every quarter horse moves 20 tons of refrigeration, so it would take about 5 horsepower to give you enough refrigeration using your LNG. Has that been looked at closely?
We're looking at it. We haven't, when you say closely, we haven't finalized the decision, but the passive thermal siphons that are just installed and they don't require any energy use at all, It's the heat exchange from the ambient air.
Yeah, have you talked to everybody up north how well all those work? Some of them don't work so well, you know.
Yeah.
I could take you to several buildings and show you.
We're finalizing that design right now, but we're open to a conversation.
Yeah, all right. Thank you.
Is there anything special about this tank built where it is? Is this a radical idea, or are there other tanks around the world built like this?
This is not a radical idea. There's other tanks around the world like this. There's one just recently completed in Vancouver and Richmond, right adjacent to one that's been in service since the 70s. Many utilities use LNG for peak shaving, which is one of the things I referred to this tank as being a long-term option, and that is that during the peak of the winter, they'll vaporize the LNG, put it into their system, and what that allows them to do is reduce the capacity that they pay for in the pipeline and average their capacity more efficiently versus having to pay for the peak capacity of the pipeline and only use a portion of it the remainder of the year. So these tanks are in existence a lot of places. We had two large LNG tanks in the Kenai since the 50s from ConocoPhillips. Each one of those tanks was a little over 1 billion cubic feet per tank. This tank, the 5.25 million gallons, equates to 0.4 billion cubic feet.
Have you looked at expanding the gas to an expander and making electricity off of your letdown?
I've had a couple of conversations with people on that over historically. The LNG is stored at 2.5 PSI. Mm-hmm. So where that seems to be more beneficial is when you're taking high pressure pipeline gas into a low pressure system and you use the expander at that point to drive some power generation. We do a similar thing to that in the liquefaction process. We use a turbo expander. So we take our gas in at high pressure and we take it through an expander and take it down to low pressure and get that cooling. So that works for our liquefaction process. For the LNG, the way we're storing it, it doesn't look like it'll be an option.
Deanna, would you speak a little bit to, so this part of this resolution is the $40-some million to $48 million total investment into this tank. As a board, obviously, we'd like to kind of keep track of how that's going. Also, what is the IGU component to this resolution and to the construction?
Sure. So as far as reports on the status of the project, we'd be happy to provide any as the board directs, whether that be monthly, quarterly, whatever the board's desire is as we move forward with the project. A significant amount of the budget, $30 million plus, is EPC contract for the tank. So that's a design, build, construct, firm price. The remainder of the balance of plant is we're working on the optimal contractual approach right now. Some of that might be where we do some of the general contracting on
the bonded cost. Right.
Yeah, the tank is bonded. And we did find out a little bit late in the game, and one reason for the budget adjustment from some of our previous estimates is it does fall under the Alaska Labor and Wages Act, so Davis-Bacon wages are required as part of this construction activity. Did I answer your questions? Was there one more?
I'd just like to see, John.
Oh, the IGU update. So the additional requirement in the resolution that is for the IGU board to concur with this expenditure. Obviously, they're going to inherit the debt that we take on as we build this project. The IGU management is supportive and is taking a memo to their board of directors requesting approval or requesting concurrence on Tuesday. They've done some recent and updated analysis and determined that this storage tank and its size is the most economical approach to the interior energy plan, particularly with a 50% conversion assumption. 35% conversion, you could look at incrementally building this storage as you did demand, but that'll preclude the opportunity to build large storage in the future as you would have spent a significant amount of capital with the incremental tanks. So it's been acknowledged by both project teams that this approach with this size of tank is the right approach for our project.
I would just ask that we have some type of an update on how it's progressing and with the budget and status of completion and schedule.
Yeah, certainly we can incorporate that into our IEP update. Okay. Mr. Chair.
Kevin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Based on Governor Murkowski's comments earlier, and I think you've kind of addressed it, but not necessarily all at once, with the concern about Doyon and their exploration undertaking that's upcoming, how this proposed storage facility can work with a successful Doyon drilling season if they do find gas through those concepts of pipeline capacity and seasonality of use within the Fairbanks area.
Sure. So depending on the level of success that Doyon has, we may be looking at an opportunity where liquefaction might be the right thing for Doyon Gas in Nanana. So we, rather than build a pipeline, it's a 50 miles and probably somewhere around $100 million investment to build a pipeline from the Nanana gas source. We may be forced with looking at whether it makes sense to just actually liquefy there. So this storage would play into that. If a pipeline is chosen, if they have enough gas to justify the expense of the pipeline, we're also talking about a single source of supply at that point, and having the redundancy of supply and the ability to manage that pipeline size to not match a peak and use the LNG for those two things, to provide that secondary source for security supply and also to efficiently transport gas we need throughout the year. So it plays well into that opportunity for Doyon Gas. Allows us to continue to build the market, for which any potential source of gas into our community has to overcome the demand challenge that we've talked about so much, the conversions. Us moving forward with that helps any other project that we can consider in the future.
Dan, I believe that everyone here hopes that Doyon is super successful. But with their success, let's just say, for instance, they're not going to drill till this summer, as you know. They're not going to next summer. Not drilling this winter. They're drilling next summer. Going to barge everything up the river. Ice road out there this year. Build an ice road out. Build a pad. So with that being said, if everything went perfect, wouldn't it take them 3 years by the time they find the gas, decide how much is there, do the testing, because that's not going to be done until the end of summer. And then if they're going to build a pipeline and get the permits and the right-of-way, it would be 3 years, and that's if everything went perfect. Would you agree with that? You built some pipelines.
Yeah, I think you're being generous with the 3 years. I think it'll probably be longer. I mean, first of all, one well does not make a development of gas. So we're talking about sizable investments to bring that gas into our community. We're going to require a gas development, not a gas exploration well. That requires additional investment and additional drilling and gas processing, depending on the type of gas they find. So it is going to be a period of time. And so we do have some time to look forward and make adjustments to our project if it makes sense.
But if they're successful, we want them to be successful. Isn't that correct?
100%.
Yeah.
I'd love to see them find
right.
as much gas.
I just want to make sure that goes on the record that we want them to be successful. Yeah.
This,
you know?
This reminds me of another project that I'm familiar with, and that's Inuvik in Canada. Inuvik was at a gas power generation built off of a well that was found close to their community. That well went dry after a period of time, 15 or 20 years, and they've been forced to now install LNG to be able to provide the gas to their community versus relying on that well that they did over those many years. We're kind of doing it a little bit in reverse. We're starting with the LNG. We're hopeful that additional gas production will come from an alternative source, but we need some redundancy. We're talking about single sources of supply. We're not lucky enough to have a pipeline coming from Texas, a pipeline coming out of North Dakota, a pipeline, you know, from multiple different directions that provides other utilities with that security of supply. So this investment we're making in the LNG infrastructure, is if we're so lucky to get a pipeline source and Anna is successful, that will open up just additional opportunities, and it's not wasted investment.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Thank you, Dan. So I'm going to call for a question.
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
State Commissioner Paradis.
Aye.
Mr. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mr. Carl.
Aye.
Ms. Brown. Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Next up is item G, our 2017 audited financial statement. John?
And item 7G is a presentation on Ada's audit FY 2017 financial statements by a brief presentation by our auditors, BDO. And this time we have Brent Applegate and Vicky from BDO to present.
Vicky Stressa, BDO. I'm a director on the job. Eric Campbell, partner, couldn't be here. He was already tied up in Barrow right now. So I'm going to keep it brief. I'm just going to go through the audit wrap-up document real quick with you, and then if you have questions on the financials, just a brief overview of the financial statements. Before that, I'd just like to thank all the staff at ADA over here. They do a great job. They keep us on a timeline, and everything gets printed. Everything gets given to us right, timely, everything, and the audit goes really smoothly every year. This is the second year we've done it. Last year was a bit of a struggle because we actually had to learn your organization, but this year everything went smoothly. I mean, there's always complicated issues that come up, but you have great competent management over here that go do all the research that needs to be done and then come to us and say, does this look right? You know, so based on that, we completed our audit of the financial statement and printed our report as of November 27, 2017. So you'll see this on page 3 of the wrap-up document on the status of the audit. One thing to note is the objective of our audit is to obtain reasonable but not absolute assurance about the financial statements are free from material misstatements. And then all records and information requested by us was provided timely, and management's cooperation was excellent throughout the whole process. Going to the next page in the financial statement is the results of our audit. You didn't adopt any new significant accounting policies and practices this year, but over here we do say that the summary of recently issued accounting pronouncements is on note 2 of the financial statement. And that's one thing management also wanted us to point out real quick to you. So if you turn to page 35 of the financial statement itself, it's the big packet over here. And right in the middle over there, recently issued accounting pronouncement. The major one that's going to affect your organization is going to be GASB 75 accounting and financial reporting for post-employment benefits and other than pension. So in 2015, all of the employees here in the authority, they are in PERS. And in 2015, the pension portion of the liability was brought into the books. And that amount at the end of this year was approximately $15 million. So in next year's financial statements, you'll also see the other post-retirement benefit, mostly the healthcare cost of this liability, come into your financial statements. And we don't know the actual amount of what that is exactly going to affect, but sometime next year, probably February, March, you should probably get some ideas of what that number is going to be. But it's not going to be as big as the pension liability for sure. So that's going to be a major change in the financial statement next year. So that's probably going to come with another three pages of disclosures in here, maybe four. And then, but it's going to be an additional liability that's going to be brought into the books. So going back to the wrap-up document again, page 5, significant accounting estimates. As we are talking about the pension liability here, that is by far your biggest estimate in the financial statements, and those are provided by the state after the due retirement audits. Corrected and uncorrected misstatements. We didn't have any corrected misstatement. There is one uncorrected misstatement that's been the same one for many years, where management has decided to report certain portion of your notes receivable at the historical amount instead of what's actually due per the agreement. But this is consistent with how much you actually receive, so it's not really that big of a problem. Next phase, I'm actually going to go to the internal control over financial reporting, and really, as we do our audit, we also look at the internal controls and procedures and policies that you have placed in at the organization. And when we look at it, like if we find something, we put it into three different buckets, like deficiency in internal control, significant deficiencies or material weaknesses. So whenever we come across a deficiency in internal control, we have to evaluate between the three buckets, and if we decide that it's a deficiency in internal controls, at that point it's just us communicating to management at that point, and it's usually done verbally. But anything higher than that, significant deficiencies or material weaknesses, would be in writing and would actually present to the board. On the great note, yet we don't have anything like that to report. Following that, there's some other required communication over here. Just to point out, we didn't have any disagreements with management, and we didn't encounter any significant difficulties during the audit. Other than that, following that is the representation letter that the management signs as part of the financial statement reporting process, where they say, you know, we are presenting these numbers, things along those lines. So that's all I have for the audit wrap up. But if you have any questions on the financials,
questions for the board? Brenda or the Fred?
Mr. Chairman, I just note that under former member Dan Kenney's leadership, we had an audit committee meeting and reviewed this in quite some depth, probably an hour and a half conference call anyway, and I just appreciate the audit committee function, the clean audit, and the work that's been done to bring us to this point.
Thank you, Brett. I anticipate we'll continue that process for next year. Any further questions? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I just want to take an opportunity to thank Julia and the staff that worked so hard on the audit this year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We need the motion to accept the audit.
Just a presentation, actually. All right, moving along here on item number 8 under new business is a G17-17, determining dividends to be provided to the state for fiscal year 2019. John?
Item 7H, resolution number G17-17, regards the dividend to be made available to the state by ADA for fiscal year 2019. Staff recommends that ADA provide a dividend of $4,792,000, which is the maximum amount allowable under statute.
Mr. Chairman.
Right.
I'd move resolution G17-17.
I second it.
Discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Greg.
I just want to note that the linchpin of this calculation is net income is defined in statute such that we are forwarding to the state the maximum amount the authority can make available under the Act. We continue to pursue appropriate legislation to modify the statute with regards to unrealized gains and losses, and we'll see what comes of that in the next session.
What's that? Any discussion on the evening? Question?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Dave Commissioner Paradise.
Aye.
Mr. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mr. Carl.
Aye.
Ms. Brown. Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Cruz.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. That brings us to item number 8, the director's comments, A, B, E. I will make mention that our next meeting is January 11th. John, why don't you go ahead and take the floor.
So item 8, director's comments. I made the board aware, but wanted to have on the record, ADA has been working with the Fairbanks North Star Borough Tiger Team on planning for the arrival of military personnel and their families at the Pileson Air Force Base related to the arrival of two F-35 squadrons. The majority of these personnel and family arrivals are projected to take place from 2020 through 2022. Information on the Allison Regional Growth Plan is available at www.eafbregionalgrowth.com. Many of the focus areas of this Tiger Team relate to community needs that are covered by the borough and the city and housing needs that are covered by entities like the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. That said, ADA is exploring opportunities to either provide or access financing where relevant, for example, tax-exempt private activity bonds for private utilities, conduit revenue bonds for health care and mental health expansion, and commercial lending for business growth. Other than that, loan and dashboard reports, development project matrices are available for your review, and also available for your review is the Callan Investment Measurement Report for the quarter ended September 30, 2017. And if you have a request on continuing education, please contact Sherry Severson.
Thank you, John. More comments?
Mr. Chairman, I would just add to Fred and thank Brenda for a clean audit. I, too, was on that committee. I didn't do much, but I sat in. But there was a common theme through the whole thing, and that was extraordinary respect for the information that ADA gave them, and likewise their ability to cooperate and bring forth the clean audit. Those things aren't easy to do. And you had a record of having those, and I'm glad. Congratulate Brenda and the team for bringing that back to us. Thank you very much.
You've asked for a discount, sir.
The other thing is the time of year that we all give thanks, and I know you joined me for thanks for everything that we have. And wish everybody a Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Jerry. Further comments? I'd like to mention that Sherry, put a hard copy of our 2018 meeting dates, so that you can have them here. You can get a memo on the via email, so these are the dates for me. I would like to extend my thank you and deep appreciation to the IEP team, everybody involved, from ADA staff to consultants to FinTech folks. I'd also like to thank the folks and the subcommittee working on IEP. Both internally and externally, it's been a long road. I'll say we're 90% there. We still have a few things left to finish up with, but it's all good, going in the right direction. I thank Brenda and her staff for the audit, for the work, and our finances, and keeping us abreast. And again, I'd like to welcome our two new board members and look forward to working with you in the near future. With that, I will take a motion for adjournment.
Absolutely.
And now we get to do Alaska Energy Authority.